Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Governor Gavin Newsom has repeatedly insisted that he is not running for president in 2024, but he continues to put himself in situations that makes it easy to question, is he really not going to run? Governor Newsom has begun a week-long trip to China to promote action on climate change, strengthen economic ties, promote tourism. And then all of a sudden, it was announced that he would stop in Israel on his way to China to meet with Israeli victims of the war with Hamas. Next month, plans are still on for a televised debate with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who is in the running for president with the Republican Party, all of which are high-profile moves for a governor who says he has no interest in taking on President Biden in next year's election. Laura Cordy is the co-author of Politico's California Playbook newsletter and joins us today with the latest political twists and turns with Governor Newsom, as well as some very interesting news coming out of Senator LaFonza Butler's office late last week. Good morning, Laura.
Hi, Vicky. Thanks so much for having me.
It's been a pretty busy time politically.
Oh, man, I know. I thought the end of the legislative session would calm down, but not at all.
No. Okay, so let's start off with what's happening this week. Governor Newsom is in China, a big trip, lots of different stops. Can you explain the reasons on paper for his trip?
Yeah, on paper, Gavin Newsom wants to promote, you know, climate change measures. That's been a big priority for his office. And certainly this is an opportunity for him not just to build these ties and encourage other countries and other, heads of state to embrace climate change measures, but also to show what California is doing as a leader in this area. So it's good PR for California. It's good PR for Gavin Newsom. And it pushes the ball down the field in terms of one of his biggest priorities.
Are there any risks that come with an international trip like this?
I think there's always the risk that you're overstepping the kind of heads of state of your own country. You know, Gavin Newsom, even though he is a national name, is not a federal actor. And already there are some Democrats and some U.S.-based democracy groups who are a little bit worried about how his visit will, affect the rhetoric and the tone around China. There are some people who are concerned or they've expressed concern that him just focusing on climate change overlooks human rights violations and other issues that are, there are folks who are concerned about him normalizing some of the things that they see as human rights violations in China by just focusing on climate change.
The governor did say that, this trip to China was done in consultation with the Biden White House and received its blessing. What do we know about that collaboration and what went on, potentially behind the scenes?
Right. I think that Gavin Newsom in the past year especially has shown a great deference to Joe Biden ever since there were these kind of rumors and speculation that he might be trying to challenge him in 2024. He's really been showing that he is not going to step out of line when it comes to the administration. And so certainly these kinds of trips, especially when you're meeting with the leaders of foreign countries, has to have some collaboration with the State Department. We understand that there was a communication with the White House on this issue. And that's pretty typical. And I think that's typical of any governor traveling abroad in an official capacity.
Given that the governor has only taken a few international trips in his capacity as governor, how does this one differ from previous ones?
This is, I feel like what really differs about this is that more people are simply paying attention. He did go abroad early in his tenure as governor, but this really strikes a different tone just because he has become such a bigger name. And also, as I'm sure we'll get into, him visiting essentially what is, one of the most tense areas of the world right now in Israel is really signifying that he is a person of importance, that he wants to be in these conversations. It's not so much of a, symbolic trip anymore. I think people are really looking at this in the lens of how is he going to be as a leader on the national stage? There's a lot more eyes on him, I think we can say, this time around.
And when it comes to that trip to Israel, I mean, he wasn't the only governor to do so. New York's governor visited Israel as well.
Sure.
New York Senator Chuck Schumer. What was the reasoning for Governor Newsom's visit to Israel?
Well,
did it come as a surprise to you?
It did come as a bit of a surprise to me when really it shouldn't. I'm mostly surprised that they could organize it so quickly, especially when he's, it was essentially a detour on a trip to China. But I think that Governor Newsom is somebody who wants to stay involved in what's happening. And I think he's also somebody who wants to show that he's willing to, you know, offer help and be a team player. California, you know, obviously is not a nation, but wields an enormous amount of power economically, I would say symbolically, when it comes to being a leader of the nation. And so him stopping there, I think, was certainly to offer California support. He, you know, California is trying to send humanitarian aid to both civilians in Gaza and in Israel. So, you know, it was a very short trip. It was 10 hours. He met with some survivors. He met with some heads of state, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. You know, again, he's not president, which is what he actually told reporters last night. I'm not president. I can't forge any kind of, you know, real diplomatic ties here. But it was, I think, symbolic for him to show that he is willing to be in these arenas and that he can hold himself in these arenas.
I mean, he has said repeatedly that California is a nation state, you know, when he would give his press conferences. And maybe if he isn't, you know, I know rumors are continuously to swirl around about whether he's going to run for president. He has repeatedly denied that. But do you think he's also testing the waters to see what the future holds for him once he terms out as governor?
Yeah, I think that people look at his national, you know, posturing just through the lens of being president, which is certainly a possibility. But it never hurts any politician to just grow their national profile. And I think that's kind of something that we need to consider, is that there's lots of avenues that he could take from growing this national profile. I have no idea what he would like to be. I have no idea what besides president would be appealing to him. Some people have floated the idea of him running for senator. Some people have floated the idea of him being an ambassador somewhere, a cabinet appointment. Whatever his future holds, I think what he's doing now is keeping his options open for what happens after the governor's office.
You know, that reminds me also with the trip to China and it being the undertones of climate. I mean, that brings me to former Governor Jerry Brown, who's very big on climate. And he also worked hard to deepen ties with China when he was in office. He now chairs UC Berkeley's California China Climate Institute. And he did comment about Newsom's trip. What did he have to say?
I actually did not see that comment. What did Jerry Brown have to say? I'm so sorry.
It was actually in Politico. It was on Friday when I was flying out of town and reading it on the flight, essentially just kind of showing support to the governor and that he, you know, being solely focused on climate policy. Mm-hmm. And also how I believe Governor Newsom, and there has been some reporting from Politico as well about potentially being a climate governor. So kind of carrying on the tradition from one governor to the next.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that Jerry Brown is somebody who Gavin Newsom definitely looks up to, I think sees as a mentor, somebody to model himself after on, you know, on certain issues. And so that's not surprising at all. I think that there's been that kind of momentum in California for a long time, wanting to be a climate change leader. And so, you know, Newsom's going full force into that.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Laura Cordy, co-author of Politico's California Playbook newsletter. Another big political announcement late last week, it's been a busy 7 days and counting, is that the newly appointed California Senator, LaFonza Butler, will not, in fact, run for the seat in 2024. You know, and this first came out of the New York Times. Sean Hubler reported this. And the quote that really stood out to me was that Senator Butler, I mean, just, you know, weeks into this position, if that, said that this is not the greatest use of my voice. You know, do you know more about the reasoning behind making an announcement like this with just really being newly appointed as a senator?
Yeah, I mean, that was the immediate question. Honestly, that was the question before we even knew who would take over for Dianne Feinstein's seat. It was, would this person essentially throw a huge wrench into the Senate race and, you know, challenge essentially the three Democratic frontrunners? And LaFonza Butler announcing that she's not going to run, you know, she talks about she wants to just focus on her time in office, which I'm sure is absolutely true. There are lots of, you know, Democratic consultants also telling me that if she were to run, she faces a huge uphill battle. It's a short 5 months until the March primaries. She'd have to do a lot of fundraising. You know, I think it's important to remember that LaFonza Butler doesn't come from the public sector. She doesn't come from elected office. And so she really has no campaign committee set up. You see a lot of times when candidates enter office, they might have, you know, a kind of bank account in the works for a couple of years. She'd have to build that up in 5 months, which is just an insane challenge. And also she'd have to build up name ID. You know, people people know who Katie Porter is, they know who Adam mm-hmm. Schiff is, know who Barbara Lee is, and to try and essentially get up to pace with those three in such a short amount of time, I think would be pretty grueling, if not very, you know, unlikely.
How does it change the dynamic of the current race with the three leading Democratic candidates? I mean, does it kind of just go back to before Senator Butler was appointed, you know, because there was that uncertainty with this appointment?
Yeah, I think that it goes back to normal in some capacities. I also think that there's a lot more pressure now on Barbara Lee to succeed. I'm sure, talked a lot about how Gavin Newsom had promised years ago to appoint a Black woman to the seat. There were a lot of people, both in California and across the nation, watching to see that he did appoint a Black woman to the seat, and he did. But now, you know, there's still an appetite to have a Black woman senator representing California, and the front runner right now for that, you know, title would be Barbara Lee. I mean, she is the most prominent Black woman, obviously, is actually running for the Senate seat. And so I think there are a lot of folks who really want to see her get into office. Unfortunately, she's just been trailing behind Adam Schiff and Katie Porter for months now. I think the last poll I saw was her at about 7%, whereas Adam Schiff tends to be around 20, Katie Porter 19, 18 points. So I think the pressure really falls to Barbara Lee if she wants to, you know, satisfy the wishes of the community that wants to see a Black woman in office.
Staying with Congress, the fight for House Speaker is continuing to get interesting. Yeah. Lots of curveballs to this. I believe Jim Jordan was voted out or removed from
no longer in contention.
No longer in contention. That's the right vocabulary for
yes.
it. But there are a lot of others that have stepped up as potential candidates. And so a new vote is expected, I believe, tomorrow.
That's right. Tuesday. Yep.
So how could, I mean, and this also impacts California with swing districts. I mean, obviously, Speaker Kevin McCarthy no longer being the speaker. I mean, how does this ultimately impact California politics?
Yeah, I think that there is a huge loss to Californians in general and California Republicans specifically by not having Kevin McCarthy in office. I just wrote this morning about the kind of fundraising that Kevin McCarthy has helped funnel to some of these vulnerable incumbents in California in the past year. Listen, there are some really tight races, and these Republicans in California need all the help that they can get. We're looking at candidates in the Central Valley like David Valadao and John Duarte, in Orange County like Michelle Steele and Young Kim. There's also, you know, Katie Porter's district is up for grabs, and Republicans are really excited to get their hands on that. So there's, you know, some concern about backing Scott Baugh enough. California has had a speaker in Congress for a long time now between Nancy Pelosi and Kevin McCarthy, and it definitely helps California's role on the national stage and gives us a little bit more clout and a little bit more attention to have somebody in such a powerful position. So it's a loss definitely for those Republicans who could use a speaker's heft behind them as they go up in these difficult races, but also just for California as a whole, it's kind of a step back and a step away from power.
How has it been just following this as a political journalist during, especially with the House speakership? I mean, it's an unprecedented time. This hasn't happened before.
No. And I think about how it took Kevin McCarthy 15 rounds of voting in January to make this happen. And that was unprecedented, too. Right. And now we have another unprecedented event, which is, you know, Matt Gaetz kicking Kevin McCarthy out. That's never happened before. It has been really fascinating to see how this affects the dynamics of Republicans. I will say something that we've seen is Democrats really try and seize on this kind of chaos and hang it around the necks of these vulnerable Republicans, especially, you know, I think that in Congress, there's always this desire to be seen as responsible and be seen as unified. And, you know, a lot of the vulnerable Republicans in California took a vote for Jim Jordan, who is somebody who, you know, denied the results of the 2020 election and also, you know, has some unpopular opinions on January 6th. And Democrats are really trying to hang that around the heads of Republicans going into these tight races in these moderate districts. So overall, the chaos is not good for Republicans across the country, but I think especially in California.
Especially just with a few months to the March primary.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Right around the corner. Laura, thank you so much.
Thank you, Vicky.
Laura Cordy is the co-author of Politico's California Playbook newsletter. Up next, livability. It involves a whole lot, from affordable housing to childcare access and feeling accepted in our communities. We'll dive into a poll that surveyed people across six counties in and around Sacramento about what livability is to them. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicky Gonzalez.